This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. It is 7:06 a.m. It is the 18th of November 2019. It's the morning run on BFM. I'm Koo Soo Chong, and with me is Wong Xiao Ning. Now, Xiao Ning, on Friday, Asian markets closed mostly in the green. The Nikkei was up by 0.7%. The Hang Seng was relatively flat, rising marginally by 0.01%. The Shanghai Comp was down by 0.6%. The Singapore Straits Times Index was up by 0.2%. And of course, in Malaysia, the FBM KLCI was relatively flat, rising just under 0.1%.
Yawn.
Yeah.
That's for the Malaysian market.
Sorry, wake me up again.
Yeah. Over in the US, US markets were green, continuing their winning streak with three major indices climbing between 0.7 and 0.8%. The Dow broke past 28,000 points, clocking its fourth consecutive week of gains. S&P posted its sixth straight week of weekly gains, while the Nasdaq climbed 0.8%, rising seven consecutive weeks. You know, the S&P is up 24% year to date.
This
is just amazing. This is a developed market, okay, guys. And we always thought US would, you know, slow down in the economy, US, China trade wars. It's as if the equity markets are like, huh, whatever.
The minimum gain year to date for all three major indexes in America is 20% for the Dow. The Nasdaq is up by 29%.
It's good times, Charlie's, right?
I don't
US?
Think it's so much an issue of the free trade war. It's more of the issue of the Federal Reserve and cutting rates again. But again, to get more clarification and granularity on these issues, we've got on the line Kingsley Jones. He's the Chief Investment Officer for Jevons Global out of Sydney, Australia. Now, Kingsley, let's start with Australia, where you're from. Australia saw its unemployment rate rise in October, indicating that prior rate cuts by the RBA are not making much of an impact. What options does RBA have moving forward, especially if the government continues to resist calls for more fiscal stimulus?
The RBA, they might do another rate cut, although it's a case of diminishing returns at this stage. It's mostly having an effect on the housing market. But the problems are weak wage growth and the lack of business investment. There's been a surge of early stage investment in venture capital, but a lot of those companies don't make profits and they're not big employers. Areas of big employment like retail, hospitality and construction are those that are a little soft right now. The one bright side in construction is infrastructure, and that's where we might see a change of sentiment from this government to expand their fiscal measures to support that monetary policy. So I think that will come, but conditions might need to worsen a little bit first in unemployment before we see that change.
And Kingsley, Australia firefighters are battling an unprecedented scale of bushfires, right? And the Scott Morrison government is also battling criticisms about its approach to climate change. Do you foresee any major political or perhaps any economic fallout as a result of these wildfires?
Well, firmly on the agenda, and I think there is actually a will to change across the board. However, it will take a change of political mindset on both sides of the House, as you know. Australia has had so many failed attempts at political consensus on this issue that it might be a bit of a surprise to get one now. However, one of the big obstacles in the past was the mining industry was opposed to things like emissions pricing, and I think that really has changed now with a lead from the majors like BHP and Rio. So, look, the nation's nearly gotten there several times with the deal before, but this time I think the political will might be emerging to get that done.
And switching to the capital markets, Kingsley, Saudi Aramco valuing the IPO between 1.6 to 1.7 trillion US dollars. That's quite a narrow range. Final price, 5th December. In your opinion, what's the sentiment among foreign investors about coming on board at this valuation?
Well, it's probably okay. You know, it was higher before, and we have to remember that this is a company that spends out something like $75 billion a year in cash dividends. So it's an enormous enterprise, and that's why you're seeing such a big headline number for valuation. Now, we have to remember that they're only going to float about 1.5% of this company on the Saudi Arabian domestic exchange, the Tata World. International investors can buy that, but at this level, I think I'll just be watching it. If they don't have a mandate specifically to buy the Gulf company, Gulf exchanges, that is to say Saudi and others like UAE, they probably won't be there, but they'll be watching it. So, look, I think this is just to get the market comfortable with this company on a reporting basis, and they'll raise just enough money to make that happen, and then perhaps they'll pursue another listing at another time.
All right, Kingsley, thanks so much for your time. That was Kingsley Jones, the Chief Investment Officer for Jevons Global out of Sydney, Australia. Now, very much following up on Kingsley's comments earlier, Xiaoning, Saudi Arabia set their valuation target well below Crown Prince MBS's goal of $2 trillion. MBS, of course, standing for Prince Mohammed bin Salman. He wanted a $2 trillion valuation. Now that's been pared back to as much as $1.7 trillion. Really quite an indication of where foreign investor sentiment sits on that IPO.
But I think he had to pare it down because if he didn't, right, how would demand be? I think he knows that the market is exactly, it's not exactly very like hot on this stock. I mean, a few reasons. One, of course, is it's oil related, which means that it's very volatile. You really have no clue where oil prices will go. Secondly, it's Saudi. There is, I think, country risks. And you know that, I mean, when there was an attack on the production facilities, right, with the drone, immediately production will come down and it will impact a company like Aramco just automatically overnight. So there's a lot of risk when you buy a single country, single product kind of company.
Not to mention the governance and transparency issues related to this. Notably, the reports had indicated there was a lack of some material information to foreign investors, and you know, no one really likes to operate in a vacuum.
No, and I think they were comparing it with, I'm not wrong, one of the Russian oil and gas companies that listed recently.
Was it Rosneft?
Yeah. And they said that the Aramco prospectus, albeit very thick, was equivalent to a pamphlet.
Yeah, right.
Especially its details on some of its reserves, which is critical because you're trying to forecast how much earnings they're going to have in the next 10, 15 years, right? And there was little detail available, so it doesn't impress foreign investors either.
So as it stands now, it is barely an IPO because I think initially there was talk about 5% of the shares being traded publicly in at least two or three international exchanges. Now it's just 1.5% of the capital issue.
And it's a local listing.
So obviously the bankers, you know, obviously cited in the stories on Bloomberg and Reuters and the Financial Times saying that interest among foreign investors was quite lukewarm.
No, that's why the lackluster response from investors outside the kingdom basically meant that Aramco decided the shares won't be marketed in the US, Canada or even Japan, which basically, like, which foreign markets are there left then? You know, international global markets doesn't seem to be something that they're marketing to at all.
Okay, we've also seen Japan's off the list, and bankers working on the deal said they were nevertheless confident that it was more than enough local demand. And I think that's really where that IPO is
heading. I mean, when you're
heading.
Only listing 1.5%, why wouldn't you be able to get the local demand, honestly?
Okay.
And at the same time, Trunk, they're giving loans out, by the way, for their own local population to go and subscribe.
Okay, so that's never a good thing, is it?
No. But I'm just curious to see what the price discovery action will really be like, because it's a book-building exercise. So at the end of the day, what kind of valuations are you really going to get?
Okay, we've also got a poll out on BFM's Twitter page asking listeners to get their to put their 2 cents forward as to why Pakatan lost Tanjung Pi. Obviously, the options are quite categorical. Economic issues is one. Succession issues is another. Education policy is yet another. And there's a whole litany of other policy issues, which, of course, is grouped under others. Let us know what you think. We'll be discussing getting to the Tanjung Pi by-election after this. So stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.